The coronavirus pandemic has left hundreds of thousands of people literally at sea around the world. They are the crew on ships. And it's possible that there is no set of workers more exposed to a pandemic. They're facing a crew change crisis. They're trapped on ships all over the world, unable to go on shore and unable to go home. Lance Lukin is the Oceania Regional Director for the Mission to Seafarers, and he's here now. Hello.
Good morning.
You've just been given $295,000 from the Ministry of Transport to help those stuck at New Zealand ports. What will you do with that money?
So the Mission to Seafarers is one of a number of maritime charities that's been at work on our ports for hundreds of years. Well, in New Zealand, we've been here for 121 years, working for the welfare of one of the most vulnerable groups of people, seafarers. And typically, before the coronavirus, what that looked like was we had seafarer centres on each of the ports. Volunteers would come and support our work, and most of those people would be retired. Obviously, in this time of pandemic, we want to limit the number of people who have access to ships. We want to continue to provide that much-needed welfare support. So the money that we've received will enable us to support our staff and to employ a few more people so that we can ensure that the welfare is delivered to the ships, but that we minimise the risk of anyone in high-risk groups being exposed to those ships and or potentially carrying the coronavirus to those crews.
So how many are we talking about in New Zealand waters? How many ships, how many people?
Gosh, we have 1,000 ships coming into Wellington Harbour each year, and we're a relatively small port, so there are literally thousands of ships coming in and out of New Zealand waters in a year's basis.
And so normally ships come in and some of the crew's contracts are ending, so they come off and they're flown home and new crew are flown in and
Absolutely.
Get on.
So there's about 1.5 million seafarers at work at any one time in the world. And typically, for the lower paid, the able-bodied seafarer, their contracts are around 9 months long. So at the end of that 9 months, they will be crew changed in and out. So at any any month, one-twelfth of that 1.5 million seafarers are going through crew changes.
I love that expression, able-bodied.
Yes.
As opposed to ordinary, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
What can you just tell me about the distinction there?
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't be able to tell you that.
Wouldn't you?
No, no.
Or, I want to be described as able-bodied.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, the reality is able-bodied or ordinary seamen, you know, the reality is they are, by and large, the bulk of crew, but some of the poorest paid members of the crew as well.
Right. And at this particular point in our history, they do not know when they're going to be able to get home.
No, absolutely not. No. Just this week, President Duterte in the Philippines has closed the borders to any international flights.
And indeed, and most seafarers, many, are from the Philippines.
Predominantly the Philippines. China is probably one of the largest seafaring nations. Philippines, India, typically, sadly to say, labour sourcing countries because they are the cheapest source of labour.
So globally, India and the Philippines have tightened their border restrictions. The Philippines
yes.
closed, you've said.
Yep.
So it's even harder for them to get home.
Yep.
So what... I'm a Filipino seafarer on a boat. What am I doing? What's happening?
Desperately wanting to go home, desperately wanting to communicate with your families because...
I could have been on that ship for how long now?
Oh, well, gosh, we had a ship coming into Wellington last week with 18 crew on, 12 of whom were 5 months over the expiration of their contract, so they're into month 15.
Are they still being paid?
Yes. Well... Yes, they should be being paid, but we know globally that non-payment of wages is one of the key concerns of seafarers. And each year, the maritime charities, along with the unions, recover, last year I think it was about $32 million of unpaid wages. That was the portion we recovered.
Yeah, so it could, that's the tip of the iceberg.
Tip of the iceberg. Yeah, and we're talking about a pretty low-paid workforce anyway. Average, you know, the average wage in New Zealand or the minimum wage is $18 an hour. For a Filipino seafarer, the average wage is 90 cents an hour.
And it's a dangerous type of work.
Incredibly dangerous, isolated, high-risk environment at the best of times, let alone adding into that a pandemic.
If they're still working, but they can't go on shore.
Absolutely.
They're all still working, are they?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, no, the cruise ships, there. We know that there is about 40 or 50,000 crew trapped on cruise ships off the coast of the United States and in parts of Indonesia and Philippines. Cannot get off the ships, won't be allowed to get off the ships.
But if the ships have been at sea for over 14 days, and if people have, nobody on that ship has any symptoms, why
can't... 28 days of you coming to New Zealand, but,
28
days.
Why 28?
I don't know. It's quite an interesting figure, really. So the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Transport have said there's a 28-day symptom-free for a seafarer coming to New Zealand. If you have been symptom-free for 28 days, then if you wish to go ashore, you have to go into 14 days of isolation. Given the fact that a ship will enter to the Port of Wellington here today, it will be here for 8 hours, and it will not be in New Zealand territorial waters for 14 days. So the likelihood of a seafarer actually being able to get off is next to impossible.
Yeah, okay. But you can understand people wanting to be very careful about that.
Yes, absolutely. And we all sit here in New Zealand going, oh, we don't want coronavirus coming on ships. The reality is, apart from the cruise ships, which were right at the beginning and there are no cruise ships now, not one case of COVID has come on a container ship or a logging ship. And so we sit in New Zealand going, oh, we don't want them to come across our borders and bring COVID. Reality is, they don't want to come across our borders typically because they don't want to catch COVID, because they're going to then get back on that ship and spend 28 days going back to China with no medical facilities on board.
But hang on, how do you know there's no COVID on the ships if nobody's got off them?
We are doing testing at the border, and typically...
At what border?
Well, most borders are doing testing. New Zealand isn't yet. We are pushing for mandatory testing at the border.
You mean going on the ships to
Absolutely.
Test?
Yeah.
All right. And you're pushing for that, but it's not happening?
No, not yet, no.
If it did happen, then you'd have the 2-day test and then the 12-day test?
Yeah, well, I mean, if they did a 2-day test, for instance, they came into Auckland and they did that test, and in 2 days it showed that they had no symptoms, well, by then they might be in Napier and they could get off for a couple of hours. I mean, I talked to a seafarer here in Wellington last week who has not physically touched ground for 183 days. You know, you've got to think about the mental health implications of that. We know at the best of times, when there isn't a pandemic, that working at sea is a highly risky environment, and the mental health implications are huge. This is a low-paid workforce who have limited resources on board ships. Most ships don't have gyms. They don't have recreational facilities. You're on board for 9 months. When you come into a port, all you want to do is get off, get some fresh air, and most importantly, you want to get access to some Wi-Fi so you can FaceTime and chat with your family back home who you haven't seen for 9 months.
Do they not have access to Wi-Fi?
Not on board ships. On cruise ships, the cruise companies are generous enough to say that they will allow seafarers access to their Wi-Fi. They charge them typically $25 a day, which when you're paid 90 cents an hour, that's a considerable chunk of your salary. So most seafarers don't access that. And on the smaller, well, I shouldn't say smaller, but on the container ships, they don't have Wi-Fi and they don't have the bandwidth to allow through the satellite networks seafarers to have access to Facebook and internet.
So, can you enable that?
So what happens is that when they come to New Zealand ports, typically if they get to our seafarer centres, at the moment they can't, we provide free Wi-Fi, but because of the fact that at the moment seafarers can't come to our ships, and this is part of the funding bid that we've put into the government, we are taking portable Wi-Fi units on board ships so that seafarers can, at least for that 8-hour period, hotspot and talk to their families.
And so you put somebody in the complete PPE gear and take the Wi-Fi kit on board?
Absolutely, yep.
All right.
Or we take it to the top of the gangway with PPE, and then from there it is taken into the ship.
I've heard some terrible stories about how some seafarers are self-harming to get themselves off the ship.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Is this true?
Yes. I mean, the reality is...
it's like shooting yourself in the foot, the old style.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's this great quote, I think Rose George in her book about working at sea, I think it's called 90% of Everything. She said something along the lines that there are no skid marks on the ocean, which I think is an absolutely great quote, because we don't really know what's happening. And particularly at sea, there is no repository, or, you know, central store of statistics around seafarers' mental health, and particularly around suicide rates. So what we do know is that at the moment, the International Transportation Federation has called for all seafarers to go on strike, that when their contracts come to an end, if they are not being given shore leave and if they are not having a crew change, they're being called on to go on strike. Now, if that happens, New Zealand's economy stops overnight. We know that because $120 billion each year of imports and exports come by ship. 99% of all trade in New Zealand comes by ship. Now, the seafarers, because they come from labour sourcing countries, are not going to go on strike. They're held ransom in that sense, because if they go on strike, they're not going to get another job. If they have a mental health concern, they're not going to get another job. But if you crush your hand, or if you have a fall, or if you get a gastro bug, then potentially you can be medically taken off board a ship, and we are seeing crew changes occur in that capacity. Through my global networks, each week I have a conference by Zoom with my equivalent regional directors around the world. We're having seafarers jumping off ship. We're having increased suicide rates. We're having increased hands being crushed because seafarers are desperate. They want to get home. They want to see their families.
If they get off for the medical treatment, do they get sent back on again? What happens then?
It depends on the situation. If it requires long-term physiotherapy, then obviously they're not going to go back straight away. The company has a responsibility under the Maritime Labour Convention to ensure that they are returned to wellness. So typically they'll be sent home. Obviously at the moment that's increasingly difficult, but in the last...
impossible in some cases.
In some cases. Well, now, yes, given the fact that many of the borders are closing. But only just 2 weeks ago we had a seafarer with an incredible gastric complaint that we were able to get sent home from Wellington. Now, we know...
Sent home to where?
He went to the Philippines.
Right.
And we know that... we can't guarantee and prove it, but we know that it is unlikely that that gastro bug was from poor food or poor hygiene. It was likely self-induced.
I don't even want to ask you how you would do that.
Oh, you don't want to know how you'd
okay.
do that, yes.
So what do you want? I mean, it's not going to be an ideal world. We're stuck with COVID for the foreseeable future. What's the best outcome?
Well, the best outcome is that the New Zealand government honours its obligations under the Maritime Labour Convention. The Maritime Labour Convention is the International Bill of Rights of Seafarers.
And that means crews must have shore leave.
They have shore leave, that they have access to welfare facilities, and that those welfare facilities are funded, and that they have competent staff to provide the mental health needs that those seafarers need right now. Because that's the basic thing that seafarers want. Firstly, they want to talk to their families at home, so they want Wi-Fi access. And then they want to talk about all the stuff that's going on in their own lives that they can't talk to the shipping agent about, because that's their employer. They can't talk to the captain about, because he's their boss on board. They won't talk to the government authorities about, because they fear, because they come from countries where governments are feared. So they want to talk to someone independent, which is why we exist. And so in a best case scenario, we would hope that the government would honour its obligations under the Maritime Labour Convention and ensure ongoing funding for the frontline support that seafarers need at our ports.
All right. So if the Maritime Labour Convention were to be honoured in New Zealand and crews had to have shore leave and welfare facilities, how would we ensure that that's done absolutely safely?
Well, most seafarer centres are behind the wire on the ports. So here in Wellington, we have a seafarer centre, and that, we could talk about that because that's quite an interesting one. We have had one on our port since 1903. But with the 2016 earthquake, the building that we were in was destroyed. So we have a temporary seafarer centre in Shed 52. But that's only allowed to be open during cruise ship season, because that's also the cruise terminal. So right now, seafarers cannot have access to that because it's closed off and that building is being used for another purpose.
So it's not closed off because of COVID.
Nope.
It's closed off because it's not the cruise ship season.
Absolutely.
and unlikely to be the cruise ship season.
For the foreseeable future, absolutely. Right. So we have a facility that provides Wi-Fi and seafarers can't get access to it. So in an ideal world...
And if they were to have access to that temporary centre, yep. would they also be able to have access to, you know, Wellington City?
If they're COVID-free, absolutely. I don't see any issue with that.
And you would ensure that they are COVID-free?
Well, it's not my responsibility to ensure they're COVID-free.
You would recommend that the government ensure they're COVID by doing what?
Mandatory testing at the
border. So they would be tested on board and then tested again on board?
Yep. And let's be honest, many of the ships that come to New Zealand, if they've come from China, they will have gone to Australia first. So there's a sense in which we already have that buffer. If they're tested by the Australian authorities, by the time they get here, we will know what the outcomes of that test is.
I'm not sure that we want to rely on anybody else in this particular situation, are you?
Well, Australia has got their own issues, but they're careful about their borders as well. So, yeah, I mean, ideally we'd want to do testing ourselves. And we are looking at, you know, there are myriads of ways that can be done to ensure that seafarers can have access. But if we don't want them involved coming into the community, then at least providing a space for them on the ports where they can communicate with home, where they can have a cup of tea, where they can interact with someone that isn't in that metal box that they've been
Honestly, I mean, if you were them, you'd do a runner, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd want to.
Well, you really would try hard.
It is happening globally. So that's why we are, as I said, we know that seafarers are jumping ship. So they effectively are coming close to shore, jumping off and swimming for shore.
You'd have to have a lot of security going on.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
But here's the thing. If we don't provide for their mental health and support, if we continue to deny them access to those fundamentals of being able to talk to their families in countries that are ravaged by COVID, where they have concerns for them, that we don't facilitate crew changes, that we keep them on board well beyond the expiration date of their contracts, they're under mental duress anyway before COVID.
No, it's a horrible situation.
But just imagine how many arenas do we want in New Zealand? Because RENA, one of the major contributing factors to that disaster was crew fatigue. Mm. And crews are now under increasing fatigue. Do we want to have multiple RENAs occurring up and down our coastline?
All right. Are you sure you're not shroud waving on that one?
No, I don't think so.
You'd have to make sure, I'm just imagining, that they were allowed off to the Seafarers Centre to have a cup of tea and some Wi-Fi and so on. You would have to make sure that the crews from various ships didn't mingle.
Absolutely, yep.
And so you'd have to deep clean the centre every time one crew leaves.
Yep.
The logistics are a bit mind-boggling.
And that's why, you know, the money that we have been given is a portion of what is needed. It's not exactly what we asked for, and it's definitely not what we need. But we are talking about $60 billion a year of imports and $60 billion a year of exports. How much as a country do we rely on that? We rely on it for everything. The car that I drove in this morning, the petrol that fueled that car, the coffee I drank this morning, all came by sea. And if that stops, if the crews get to a point where they are unable to function and the shipping stops, then our nation stops. And, yep, we can throw $70 million at the racing industry to help them. We can throw $85 million at Queenstown. Well, it's not going to do a diddle if we can't have actually imports and exports occurring.
Why do you think that there is a very different attitude taken towards the crew of aircraft?
Oh, well, that's an interesting one. If I was completely cynical, typically crew of aircraft...
You're a chaplain. You're not allowed to be completely cynical, are you?
Well, I think I am. If I was completely cynical, air crew are predominantly white. Shipping crew are predominantly people of colour.
You think it's as simple as that?
Well, I think there's some inherent racism there.
All right, take your cynical hat off for a moment. What would you say?
Well, air crew have always been considered to be a high echelon workforce.
So it's either a class or a race
thing? It's a class or a race thing, absolutely. Right.
How long will the money that you've been granted last for?
We asked for our funding for 12 months. We've been given money for 6 months.
All right. And then what happens?
Then we continue to do sausage sizzles and beg and borrow and steal to continue to support the seafarers.
There have been moves to get international efforts to solve this.
Yep.
Is anything happening on that front? What could happen? How would that help?
The reality is that the maritime charities globally are all struggling, and that's because they rely on charity dollars. The Maritime Labour Convention is broken into two parts. There is the regulations and the standards. The regulations are the musts. The government must, and that's there's various things. And one of the musts is they must ensure welfare centres, where they exist, are accessible to seafarers. Then there are the regulations, the shoulds, and the shoulds are those nice to haves. And when the Maritime Labour Convention was originally written, it was never intended that the shoulds would not occur. It was that they would occur as well. But most governments have ignored the shoulds. And one of the shoulds is says under section 4.4.4 of the Maritime Labour Convention that levies would be imposed to ensure that provisions of welfare centres and mental health support staff can be provided. And the reality is that's one of the parts that we believe that our government is currently failing on.
As presumably are many other governments.
Most other governments around the world.
So, you know, we're not out of line.
No, but we could be a world leader.
Yeah. Are you getting any traction? I mean, you didn't get all the money that you wanted, I know that.
No.
Are you getting sympathy and traction, or is the government just saying, look, in these times, it's too hard?
Well, no, I don't think that's ever been the message to us. I would, to be honest with you, was surprised that they gave us as much as they did. To be honest, because we sort of pitched a figure initially of 700,000, they came back with 295. We were
700,000 would have covered you think, for the year?
For a year, yeah. So I mean, we were very pleased with what we got, but the reality is it is a drop in the bucket to what is needed ongoing, particularly if the coronavirus continues. And let's be honest, beyond the coronavirus, you know, we relied before it on volunteers who are mainly retired. We're not going to get that workforce back. So beyond coronavirus...
Why aren't you?
Well, many of them now are fearful about their own health and safety, and the break effectively has meant that a lot of those people have said, well, we're not going to come back. So going forward, we do need to have a professional group of people at the border. And let's be honest, you know, we rely on seafarers, so we want to have people there who are going to advocate on their behalf, who are the right people, who can assess for mental health concerns, suicide ideation and the like. So we want to have good professional people because the seafarers deserve that.
Somebody has texted to say it's outrageous to suggest race is the reason that maritime crew are unable to come to land. It is more to do with the fact that the air crew are not living in close confined quarters.
That's an interesting point. Air crew can fly today passengers from Doha who we know will have COVID on there. Yes, they'll be wearing PPE, but they're in a very small confined space. We're talking about 18 crew on a vessel that is the size of the Empire State Building. So, I mean, yes, they're living in confined in close quarters, but the reality is, we've got 18 crew, which is broken into three shifts. There's six people working at any one time. The likelihood that you're actually going to be in close quarters with someone on an ongoing basis on a ship is next to impossible, given the fact that on a plane they're engaging with each other for the entire flight.
Mm. I mean, some people are outraged at your suggestion that it's race that is the reason for the treatment of seafarers as opposed to the treatment of air crew, and other people are outraged at me suggesting that it's not. So we've, you know, cut both ways. You are now doing a PhD in chaplaincy.
I'm doing a PhD in mental health implications for adult adoptees. Absolutely nothing to do with the sea, but an interest of mine.
All right. And you've just completed a Master of Chaplaincy.
Yes.
Which is a program that you helped develop.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you do for a Master of Chaplaincy?
It's looking at how you can provide frontline support to people in any sector from a faith-based perspective without being in-your-face faith-based, proselytising.
You mean any kind of faith?
Absolutely any faith at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be interested in the interview we have later on, actually, with the Zimbabwean psychiatrist who established the friendship benches.
Right.
And he got the grandmothers to sit on the friendship benches and just talk to people who needed to talk about depression or whatever was going on in their lives, because they don't have enough psychiatrists there.
Yeah.
That's chaplaincy.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
It is. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
It's good to be here this morning.
Lance Lucan, do I call you Reverend? Are you a Reverend?
I think you can call me Irreverend this morning.
thanks for coming in.